Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In The Now podcast channel. Joining us, as always, for the conversation, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. So, Shane, it's great to be back on the mic with you following a brief late summer hiatus, though, of course, as always, a lot to catch our listeners up on. So thank you for dropping by on this Tuesday following the Labor Day holiday weekend. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to be back with you. You know, August came and went. It's my favorite month of the year, but it's time to get back to work, right?
With that, Shane, I know Congress is getting back to work. Congress is returning from its summer recess. I'm curious as to what will be the focuses, the priorities of the legislative agenda as we're now making our way into the fall and through the balance of 2024.
Yeah, you know, there's an abbreviated work period coming up. I say abbreviated because, you know, I think many elected officials are anxious to, you know, get back home and finish off the campaign season. And so the focus between now and the end of September will be government funding. If government funding legislation is not passed on October 1st, there would be a government shutdown. I think both sides want to avert that and, you know, fund government operations. However, there are some squabbles over, you know, the details, obviously, not only the funding levels, but the duration of funding. You know, there are those who want to just kick it, the can down the road until right after the election. There are others that want to go a little bit deeper into 2025. And, you know, tee up whoever is president to kind of have a hand in the final negotiations for government funding. Within this debate, though, there'll be other issues that arise. You're seeing a lot of Republicans who want to attach legislation that would focus on, you know, illegal immigration, the right to vote, et cetera. And make that part of this government funding debate. You'll see Democrats push issues related to reproductive rights. So you'll see and hear about a whole host of other issues that come into play between now and the end of the month. But the main kind of entree, if you will be government funding. So there'll be other things that you hear about, but that's kind of the main act.
Well, it sounds like a busy few weeks ahead. We'll definitely keep our eye as to how developments progress with respect to government funding. I do want to turn over to the campaign trail as we check in on Decision 2024. And a lot has transpired, Shane, since we last spoke, and this spans the Democratic National Convention in Chicago a few weeks ago. We also did see RFK Jr., he coming out to endorse former President Trump. So how would you characterize the current state of the race for the White House as Election Day is roughly 2 months away?
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think that's kind of instructive for us. You know, so much has changed over not only the past 30, 60 days, but that is where we're heading to, in the sense that it's going to be a sprint to the finish line. And you know, we're going to see ebbs and flows and changes in direction daily in the coming weeks. So, you know, be prepared for that fluidity where, you know, what is the issue du jour today is not the issue that anyone is talking about in 1 or 2 or 3 days. So it's going to be a very fast-paced few weeks coming up. And, you know, you noted a few items, you know, the RFK bowing out is a win for Trump. However, his name will still appear on the ballots in many key states. So even though he has endorsed Trump, you know, he still may actually pull some votes away from Trump. And I think the Trump team is very concerned about this, even though at the same time they're happy that RFK has endorsed him. You know, the playing field since we last spoke continues to evolve. While we see the same handful of states like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Arizona being key. I think North Carolina really has entered the fold. Georgia, you know, I think was kind of teetering back and forth, but now it's clearly a swing state. I think, you know, between those states, that is 93 electoral votes. So you see that those states have the power to swing this race in anyone's direction. I give Michigan a little bit of an advantage to Harris. I think the rest, you know, you could see a poll today that says one thing and a poll tomorrow that has the other person winning. So those continue to be the states to focus on, but it just shows you that realistically this race can still swing in either direction. You know, it's clear that as of today, Harris has the momentum on her side and enthusiasm, but will that translate in another 2 months? Now, I also laugh to myself when I say another 2 months, because the reality is that voting will start in just another like 2 weeks. Many states, you know, will start to open up early voting. So millions of Americans by the end of this month will probably have voted already. That is something to keep in mind. However, someone's propensity to vote that early means their mind is made up. So this race is still fluid for those undecided voters, or even, you know, the voters who have decided between Harris and Trump, but they're not, you know, truly locked in. You know, today they're thinking Harris, but tomorrow they could be swayed by events to Trump or vice versa. So, you know, voting is literally just around the corner, but this remains a wide open race to some extent.
From the sounds of it, it does remain close at the moment, though, of course, anything can happen over the next couple of months. Now, outside of the race for the White House, I know we've been keeping track of some key congressional races as well across the country, namely Senate races. So what exactly are you monitoring the most at the moment, Shane, and where do some of these key congressional races currently stand?
Yeah. So in the Senate, you know, it's 51-49 Democrats' favor. I think that Republicans have a better chance than Democrats to hold the Senate after this election. However, you know, with the fluidity of everything, you can't say that's, you know, a slam dunk by any measures. You know, start off with West Virginia, where Republicans are going to pick up one a seat there. That's 50-50. And then the next three best pickup opportunities for Republicans are Montana, Ohio, and Michigan. And I list them probably in the order I think that is the best chance for Republicans to pick up. You know, Montana is a state where I think Trump is going to win and win big by, you know, maybe 20 points or more, which would be a 60-40 split. That'd be very hard for Democrat Senator Tester to overcome that kind of tidal wave of red support. Similar, but not as, you know, tilted toward Trump would be Ohio, where I think Trump will win with at least 53% of the vote. But I think Democrat Senator Sherrod Brown could overcome that differential and, you know, have enough crossover vote and independent vote in his favor to still win. If Trump starts looking like he wins in the high 50s, I think that would be tough for Sherrod Brown. So, you know, there are other states in play here like Arizona, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Maryland. But, you know, very few pickup opportunities for Democrats. Their two best opportunities are Texas and Florida, where I think Republicans will prevail in both those states. So, you know, Democrats have a lot of defense to play here. If they run this perfectly, I think it would be a 50-50 Senate, and you know, the vice president would be the tiebreaker. So I think that's maybe best-case scenario for Democrats. I think in the House actually looks a little bit better for Democrats, even though Republicans are currently in control. In the House, you have probably two seats that are almost automatic pickups for Democrats. And then after that, you have about two dozen seats that are true toss-ups. And of those seats, about half are currently held by Republicans and half are currently held by Democrats. I would note that many of those seats are in California and New York, I would say about a half dozen. So those are two seats that Vice President Harris is going to win, right? Two states. And that may drive up voter turnout enough in those districts to turn the tide. And then there are other states that have seats for grabs, like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania. So, you know, only a few dozen races out of 435 House races are going to really decide control of the House. And I really think this is a toss-up. Just remarkably, just like the Senate and the White House as well. So a lot to keep track of here, and it's still anyone's ball game for, you know, the House as well as the Senate and the White House.
With that, Shane, thank you for dropping by today to keep our listeners informed as to where some of these congressional races, as well as the race for the White House, currently stands. And we will look forward to continuing our coverage, keeping our listeners, our clients informed between now and Election Day. Though, thank you again for dropping by today, Shane, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Look forward to it, Dan. I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Likewise. Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. As always, I do want to remind our listeners, you can now locate the latest Washington Weekly publication on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From the UBS studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.